In Exodus 3, the burning bush, God tells Moses that I have heard the cry of the people, I've seen their affliction, I know their suffering, and I'm going to deliver them. I'm going to deliver them out of Egypt, and I'm going to deliver them to a good and broad land flowing with milk and honey. They had cried out, and yet, as we just read in this moment, they are camped by the edge of the Red Sea, and they are terrified because they see Pharaoh's army, those chariots roaring towards them. And actually, right before that, in the first nine chapters of chapter 14, we see that God tells Moses where to camp the people, and he says, Pharaoh's going to, basically, he's like, Pharaoh is going to know who he is, and he's going to have glory over Pharaoh. But think about this moment, camped with the sea on one side and the chariots bearing down on the other. This great moment of fear. But before we explore that further, first, here's a picture of me with a plate of hummus. Now you might be wondering, what's the deal? Well, right outside the window is the Red Sea. And what was really bizarre is to be sitting in this nice little beach-type town on the edge of the Red Sea and thinking about the events that we're going to talk about this morning and trying to imagine. It's hard. We had just walked across the border from Jordan into Israel, and we were having a mid-afternoon kind of snack there to get our bearings. And so this is the northern tip of one of the fingers of the Red Sea. This is basically where Jordan, Israel, and Saudi Arabia and Egypt are all kind of a stone's throw. On a map, the red dot there, that's where we were. Eilat was the place there. Now, we don't know where the Israelites crossed the Red Sea. I went down a rabbit hole of starting to look into that, and finally I stopped and returned back to my lesson. But the point is, we don't know exactly where. But some suggest that, I think this is the thing, people that want to give a natural account say, well, it was like in the shallows up here. It's a sea of reeds, not the Red Sea. Some say rivers, if they want to give a natural explanation, maybe it's somewhere in this arm or somewhere over here. We just don't know. It also depends on where you put Mount Sinai of the time, because there's some debate about that. So nevertheless, this gives you an idea of where we are, that they are fleeing Egypt. God is to deliver them, and actually there's a shorter way. But God says they're not ready yet. They're not ready for the warfare that they would encounter. But let's return here to Exodus chapter 14. As Jeremy just read these first few verses for us, what I want us to notice is to first note the response of the people. They've cried out. God is delivering them, and yet in this moment, they're saying, is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? This is going to be a recurring theme that happens. It said it would have been better to leave us in Egypt. We'll talk about in a minute. They have a very short memory. And yet then we see the response of Moses. It's a powerful response. One of my favorite verses, fear not, stand firm, and see the salvation of the Lord, which will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. The Lord will fight for you, and you have only to be silent. Again, as you think about, again, what the Israelites have already seen in the Exodus that's happening, that the plagues and the Passover, and now they're actually being led by cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night, they have a very visible manifestation of God with them, right? Of God's presence leading them. And yet, already, they're like, wow, you should have just left us alone there. We're just here to die. And Moses saying to fear not, be still. But then, let's look at God's response. Continuing in verse 15, the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the people of Israel to go forward. Lift up your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, that the people of Israel may go through the sea on dry ground. And I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they shall go in after them, and I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his host, his chariots and his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I have gotten glory over Pharaoh, his chariots and his horsemen. So the people's response is just absolute despair, ungratefulness. You just brought us out here to die. We should have never been here in the first place. Moses says, fear not, stand firm, see the salvation of the Lord, except to be still. God's going to do all the work. And then God, he does indeed, he does all the work involved here, but he says, get up and walk across. And look at these next couple verses. Let's look at verses 19 through 25, all that's going on here. Then the angel of God who was going before the host of Israel moved and went behind them, and the pillar of the cloud moved from before them and stood behind them, coming between the host of Egypt and the host of Israel. We read this in a verse or two, but I'm imagining what would it have been like, right? To, I don't know what this angel of the God, the kind of movement of like, and the pillar of cloud moving. But basically it's verse 20, coming between the host of Egypt and the host of Israel. And there was the cloud and the darkness, and it lit up the night without one coming near the other all night. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord drove the sea back by a strong east wind all night and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the people of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. The Egyptians pursued and went in after them into the midst of the sea, all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. And in the morning watch, the Lord, in the pillar of fire and of cloud, looked down on the Egyptian forces and threw the Egyptian forces into a panic, clogging their chariot wheels so that they drove heavily. And the Egyptians said, let us flee from before Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians. Now look, the book is always better than the movie, but I still like to see the movies. And I'm interested to see what Hollywood sometimes has to say. There was a movie, the most recent one, of course, there's Charlton Heston, but there was the one with Christian Bale as Moses, right? Kings, I forget what it's called. But basically, it's interesting. They kind of give this like almost like natural account, and it's very different. It's like the great wading across the sea. It's just like some sort of natural wind, and it starts to recede, and they're slushing through the water. We go to the Bible here, and the miraculous activity of God. This is going to be a story that they're going to tell over and over about their deliverance. And another thing that's hard to imagine, to wrap my mind around, is because if you think about, like, they're being led by this cloud, this pillar of fire, what would that have looked like? And then you think about the sheer numbers, right? I mean, at least 1 million people, at minimum. All right, we get some numbers earlier in the count, and then on their way out, there are other people that join in with them. God has the favor of the Egyptians on them, so they basically plunder the Egyptians. So you've got just 1 million-plus people with basically the treasure of Egypt wandering in the wilderness, and here they are at the sea, and what that must have been like, the logistics, right? Just the movement of people there. But what we see here is that God is protecting them. God is doing everything. They are going to see the salvation of the Lord. And when the Egyptians, they drive in after them, and then God is going to create chaos for them, and they're very much aware of it, that God is fighting for Israel. Let's read verse 26 through 29. Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea that the water may come back upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots and upon their horsemen. So Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its normal course when the morning appeared. And as the Egyptians fled into it, the Lord threw the Egyptians into the midst of the sea. And the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen of all the host of Pharaoh that had followed them into the sea. Not one of them remained. But the people of Israel walked on dry ground through the sea, the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. See that same thing repeated again. What it must have been like in that night. That fear and panic they had, and how they're saying, we should have just left us like in Egypt in this moment, this significant, I bet they would never forget it. And yet we're going to see that the story of that generation does not have a happy ending. But the mighty forces of Egypt, all his chariots and his army, is simply nothing to the power of God and when confronted with God. And in verse 30 and 31, as we wrap up this story here, this narrative, thus the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Israel saw the great power that the Lord used against the Egyptians. So the people feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and in his servant Moses. You see, remember in verse 13 where it says, you're going to see the salvation of the Lord, we see the result of that. So as we think about this then, this moment, this epic story that we maybe have had VBSs about, We've seen movies about this grand, massive, epic episode. What is that? How does that apply to us? I don't know. I think one of the things is maybe in some sort of way, not to write the actual physical things, but in our own life, maybe the spiritual battles that we have, or things, crises that come up in our life. What are the Red Sea moments we have when we feel our back against the wall and we feel that panic set in? When you don't know how things are going to work out, and maybe you have a really bad attitude about it, maybe there's some grumbling involved. I don't know what it is for you, right? But we can start to think that maybe we can look back and see a Red Sea moment that we've had, and maybe we kind of handled it like the Egyptian, like the Israelites did, with a short memory of ingratitude. Or maybe you've come through the other side. As we're going to see in a moment, they're going to come through singing on the other side. Maybe you're on the other side of it and you're looking back in the positive. Maybe you haven't faced that yet, but you will at some point. Because life is such that we will suffer and have to endure at some point. And so as we think about this, what is the application that we can make from this grand story? Well, let's go over to 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul actually brings us up. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, starting in verse 1, he says, "For I do not want you to be unaware, brothers, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the spiritual rock that followed them, and the rock was Christ. Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness." Now, he's going to appeal to some things that we're not talking about in the story, the fuller Exodus account here. But as he's hearkening back to this, we're seeing that Israel saw the powerful works of God, and they still rebelled. I mean, the sad part of the story in verse 5, "Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not pleased." You know, the generation that departed Egypt, who made it into the promised land? Joshua and Caleb. And here we're seeing hindsight 2020, he's talking about the work that God had done in them, even referencing Christ. And if you continue on, he gives some examples of some like not to be like them in this. He says, verse 6, "Now these things took place as examples for us, for the Corinthian readers and for us today, reading today, that we may not desire evil as they did. Do not be idolaters, as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. We must not indulge in sexual immorality, as some of them did, and 23,000 fell in a single day. We must not put Christ to the test, as some of them did, and were destroyed by serpents, nor grumble, as some of them did, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now these things happened to them as an example, but they were written down for our instruction, on whom the end of the ages has come. Therefore, let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed, lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation he will also provide the way of escape, that you may be able to endure it." It's interesting, in Hebrews, the Hebrew writer also references the Exodus and trying to enter into the promised land as an example of, like, they had all these things going for them and they still refuse. So don't be like that so you can enter into rest. And so in the same way today, as Paul's pointing out, you know, these things to not engage in immorality, for idolatry. Now, we're not bowing down to idols, but what are the things that we set up in our life that we let take precedence over God? And if you're feeling righteous or self-righteous, "Oh, I never grumbled." Don't tell me you've never grumbled. All of a sudden, these things that, like, these are examples, don't follow that example. And yet we know, take heed, right? "Therefore, let anyone who thinks they stands take heed lest we fall." It's got to be this humility, too, that we realize we ain't got it all down right. And I'm not so righteous that I can't fall into these same traps. But now, as we think about this, we've got like the negatives not to be like, but maybe in the few minutes we have left, let's think about maybe some other application that we can have in this regard. For one thing, from this epic story, God may be preparing us. God may be preparing us for something. You know, as we look at this, the passage in Exodus, God is preparing a people. In fact, there was a shorter route, but they weren't ready. And so God is doing something to them, refining them. We actually don't get any indication about their faithfulness while they're in Egypt. Not that I'm aware of. And so he's refining these people, and they need a lot of it. And God is preparing them. He's got work to do with the Egyptians of his goals in that regard. And so what is he doing in this Red Sea moment and in our Red Sea moments? What is God doing, possibly preparing us? Now again, when we talk about the problem of suffering, sometimes we suffer because, like, it's our consequences of our own sin. But sometimes we suffer innocently, completely. So we don't always know exactly why what is happening and why suffering. Can we still trust God in the midst of that? And I think in these Red Sea moments, God is refining them and refining us to know God, to build trust, to depend on God. You go over to Hebrews chapter 5. Hebrews chapter 5, verse 7 through 9. In the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death, and he was heard because of his reverence. Although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him. Christ didn't want to endure the suffering of the cross, but he learned obedience by what he suffered. And guess what? He still had to go through that, but God heard him. And when we think about deliverance, the deliverance isn't always in our earthly life. We might get the diagnosis that we don't recover from. We might get in the tragic accident that we don't recover from. Sometimes we do, and sometimes we don't. But the important thing here is that God redeems us, redeems our souls. We are safe in Jesus. And again, I hope that the healing comes for us. I hope that the healing comes for us. But you know, the martyrs, they weren't trusting in God just for this life, but they had greater, even deeper trust. And so even here, Jesus learning obedience through what he suffered, and because of what? That he became perfect and the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him. Because of what Christ suffered and endured, salvation is there for us. I mean, you can flip over just a couple pages in James, beginning of James. Right? I mean, the beginning of it. James 1, verse 2. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. That's real easy to read and say when we're not in the midst of those trials. Oh, yeah, it's going to make me stronger. It's going to make me better. When you're in the midst of it, the experience of it is much different. And yet we still can have that confidence that God may be doing something. God may be preparing us. And going right along with that is these opportunities to grow our faith. Growing our faith so that we can have that calm in the storm, so we don't have that reaction that the Israelites had where they're like, throw up their hands and say, you should have just left us there. We didn't want to come out here in the first place. And they totally forget everything that God has done for them. They're fearful and fickle. Have you ever been fearful and fickle? I have. And what I try to do is then, right, we remember those times where we've been fearful and fickle, and we try to grow in our faith so the next time we confront that, I can look back and I can remember what God has done, and I'm like, I'm not going to have a tantrum like a little toddler. We try to grow in our faith. Can we learn from this story? Can we learn from the previous moments that we've had? Can we learn from our previous failures to trust? Can we grow in our faith response for the future? You know, in verse 31 of Exodus 14, when it ends, when they're seeing the salvation of the Lord, notice what happened. They feared God and they believed God. And just as we talked about a few months ago about the fear of God is a good thing. It's not a scary thing. Man, that's not the best word to say, but right, the fear of God is this thing that is good for us. And we talked about having a healthy view of what that means to fear God, but they feared God and they believed God. And along with that is this idea that remembering leads to gratitude. This came up a couple weeks ago in the CIA class when we were talking about something else, but we were talking a little bit about doubt. And Os Guinness has this book called God in the Dark, and one of these chapters he talks about, sometimes the doubt can grow because we fail to remember and we fail to have gratitude. And I think that we see that explicitly here, repeatedly in the story of the Exodus, even continuing on after this chapter, if you were to continue and look at the whole Exodus. And I want to read a quote from him because I think it captures this. Because what I want to say is that part of the solution, part of the lessons we can take of this is to remember, because remembering leads to gratitude. Here's the quote from Guinness. "The man or woman of faith is the one who remembers. And the one who remembers is the one who gives thanks. Unbelief, on the other hand, has a short and ungrateful memory. This is true for whole nations as well as individuals, as Israel's history proved." Notice how he references the things that we've only talked about, the sea, but then right after this, they're going to be looking for water, and then they're going to be wanting meat, right? This is what he says. "When the people were in Egypt, they cried out for freedom. But when they were free, they cried out to go back. If there was a lack of water, they complained. And if there was water, they complained that there was no meat. There was always something else. The next thing, always, only if." So this morning I want to ask us, can we be different? I would love to say that I'm different than that. But in weak moments, I'm not. But as I continue to strive to grow in faith, for that to be the habit of response, to remember and gratitude, so I'm not ungrateful with this short memory and thus being evil and wicked like this generation that is disobedient to God. So God may be preparing us. There's opportunities to grow our faith, and part of that too, remembering leads to gratitude, and then that God is bigger than whatever, fill in the blank. Now again, I want to try to put myself in their shoes, and I don't want to think, oh, I would be like, it's okay, God will deliver us somehow. If I were there with Alicia and the girls, and we're on the coast of the Red Sea, and I hear the sound of the chariots coming, and I see the dust coming up, and they're coming after me, guess what? I'm probably panicking. But God is bigger than the whole Egyptian army bearing down on you. God is bigger than fill in the blank. Because any opposition we face is ultimately no match for God. And as we read just a moment ago in 1 Corinthians 10:13, that God will make a way of escape. Have you ever noticed that God may answer a prayer that you didn't even know? He answered in a way that you didn't even think was a possibility. Has God ever answered in a way that you didn't even know to pray for it? So you can imagine that they're here on the sea. What are we going to do? God made a way. And God will make a way for us. Now we also know what? That so often we give into the temptation and we fail. But we get back up. And I think that's where our church family comes into. We help one another. When we take our burdens to somebody, I take my burden to somebody, I don't expect them to solve it. But that feeling of that they can just help lift that emotional toil, help to bear those burdens. I think that we can be there as encouragement to others. Let's close this morning by looking at Exodus 15. Well, actually, I have one more verse after that. But let's go to Exodus 15 for a minute. I realize I'm running out of time. I thought today's sermon was going to be short. But as we look at these lessons, let's go back to Exodus 15. And let's just read these verses here, because they're going to come out on the other side singing a psalm. Exodus 15, then Moses and the people of Israel sang this song to the Lord, saying, I will sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider he has thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and my song, and he has become my salvation. This is my God, and I will praise him. My father's God, and I will exalt him. The Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name. Pharaoh's chariots and his host he cast into the sea, and his chosen officers were sunk in the Red Sea. The floods covered them. They went down into the depths like a stone. Your right hand, O Lord, glorious in power, your right hand, O Lord, shatters the enemy. In the greatness of your majesty, you overthrow your adversaries. You send out your fury. It consumes them like stubble. At the blast of your nostrils, the waters piled up. The floods stood up in a heap. The deeps congealed in the heart of the sea. The enemy said, I will pursue. I will overtake. I will divide the spoil. My desire shall have its fill of them. I will draw my sword. My hand shall destroy them. You blew with your wind. The sea covered them. They sank like lead in the mighty waters. Who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, awesome in glorious deeds, doing wonders? You stretched out your right hand, the earth swallowed them. You have led in your steadfast love the people whom you have redeemed. You have guided them by your strength to your holy abode. Whew! It's powerful, isn't it? Think about what it was like to sing that right after this experience. And so, again, in this moment that is so big and epic that, you know, millennium later, I'm sitting at the edge eating hummus on the edge of a Red Sea, and it's just like, what is this event that took place here? But we come back in our mind to say, just as Paul gave instructions, that these are here for our instructions, the same thing we can do today is think, what is it when you've encountered your Red Sea moment? Maybe you've been there, maybe you are there, or you will be there one day. And in that moment on this side of, I don't want to be like the Israelites that are panicked and not grateful and crying out, you should have left us. But what we have to do is we have to endure, we have to trust, we have to know God. He's doing something in us and he will provide a way, because I don't know about you, but I want to be on the other side. I want to be on the other side singing those praises. And guess what? One day we will be. When Christ who has redeemed us, we still deal with the pain and suffering of life, but Christ has had victory. And so, yeah, I still have to go through death at some point unless the Lord comes first. I don't want to do that. I'm not really looking forward to that. But I don't have to fear death as this ultimate enemy, because I am safe with Jesus. And like Paul says in Romans 8, that all these sufferings won't compare to the glory that's to come. And that's hard, too, because it's hard when you're in the moment over here in the suffering. It's hard to know what it's like to be on the other side, but the other side is there and God provides the way. All right, I'm getting riled up, but take a moment, right? Take a moment and in your own mind, reflect on this. What's your battle? What has it been? Or think of that time that you've been through it, and let's be there for each other to help each other through these moments. And don't take God for granted. Don't forget. And maybe when you feel that panic rise, we're reminded to be still. To fear not. To stand firm. To see the salvation of the Lord. You have only to be silent. And may we come out on the other side singing his praises. The beauty of this is that as children of God, we have access to the Father through Christ. And we have one another. We have our church family. And so again, whether it's publicly on the front pew where people will surround you and we will pray for you, whether it's in the back room with some of the elders, whether it's in each other's homes when we're together, we can be there for one another to help each other through these moments. But also, if you're not a child of God, you don't have the salvation of the Lord that he is freely offering to you. In Romans chapter 6, verses 3 through 5, I love that, where he's saying, Paul says, you were baptized into Christ, you were baptized into his death. And just as Christ was raised, you've been baptized into a death like his, you're going to be raised in a resurrection like his. That is our confidence. That is the song that we will be able to sing. And so again, this morning, if you've not done that, we can do that too. But as we close out, I just want to read these three verses and then we'll sing. Isaiah 43, 1 through 3. "But now thus says the Lord, he who created you, O Jacob, he who formed you, O Israel," maybe put your name in there, right? "He who created you, O Matthew, he who created you, fear not, for I have redeemed you. I've called you by name, you are mine. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. For I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior." Good news? So we have a Savior that invites us all. If you have any need, come forward as we stand.